Hey, parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of Believe in Florida State Basketball. This is your host, Nick Andre. Once again, thank you guys for tuning in. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Austin, man. How you doing, man? It's been a little over a week since we did an episode together, man. So how's things going?
Good, man. I didn't realize it had been that long until I was thinking earlier today as we were going through topics. And you mentioned one of the topics. I'm like, wow, we haven't really done something since he committed. Okay. But yeah it's been good, man.
Nah, that's what's up, man. Obviously, it's off season, so, you know, it's going to be a lot of slow content. And then, of course, you know, we're waiting on a lot of news. So, you know, it is what it is. But let's go ahead and start with the first topic, man. Tom House, who entered the transfer portal not too long ago, has now found a home at Furman College. So how are you feeling about that move as a whole? Because, I mean, we talked about Tom a little bit. You know, we talked about how, you know, he's a really good shooter, but he's kind of a liability defensively. So how do you feel about this new transfer?
I think it's a perfect spot for him. Yeah, he's not an ACC caliber player, but he is a Southern Conference caliber player. And Furman's one of the better mid-majors of the last decade. Really, they've done a great job at that level, made the tournament last year. But they've always been contending as one of the top teams in the Southern Conference, whether they're second or third, that they're pretty much in that year in and year out. So good spot for him. I think it's going to be a much better competition level for him. And I could see him having some success there. They've lost some big pieces at Furman with guys going to high major spots. So he'll have a chance to step in right away and contribute.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to really do my research on Furman. I'll probably do it right after this show. But, you know, it's like you mentioned to me, I think the experience with Tom House being in Florida State, it wasn't one that really worked out in his favor and even in Florida State's favor. So now him going to a mid-major where he could possibly shine and, you know, really excel at what he does best. Is really being a knockdown shooter. So I think that's really what's best for him moving forward. You know what I mean? I think he has some good moments with us at Florida State throughout the years, but, you know, it just wasn't enough that to really help the team contribute at a high level. So I'm really excited to see, you know, what's next for him at Furman.
Yeah, I'm trying to do the math real quick. In their last eight seasons, in the last eight seasons, Furman was 179-82. So they've been really good for the most part. This last year was a little bit of a down year, but they're still over 500. Just knowing how Furman likes to play basketball, I imagine they'll correct the ship here shortly.
Have you watched a few of the games before? Like, you know, do you know like their play style and everything? Like,
I haven't watched them since the 22-23 season when they beat Virginia in the open round of the tournament. But they're always built with dynamic guards. They even had a guy, I want to say they had a guy go to the NBA, was it last year? Yeah, Jalen Slauson ended up playing at Furman. He was drafted by the Kings in the second round of the 23 draft. So they're churning out guards pretty much year in and year out.
No, that's what's up. I mean, like I say, you know, I really hope that this is a situation that Tom can really thrive in, because I really think that he's a good player. I really think that he's a really excellent player, you know, especially with him and what he does best. So, I mean, like I say, you know, I don't think it was the best situation at Florida State, you know, even, you know, as I was watching last year, you know, I saw him get a lot of playing time, you know, during exhibition tournaments and even, or during like the exhibition games, you know, right before the regular season. And even, I want to say he played, I think, a few minutes in the first like two or three games per se, but, you know, you obviously didn't see that consistent playing time from him throughout the course of this season. He would play a little bit, you know, during garbage times when the game was pretty much already decided. But I think now he'll go into a situation where he will be a bigger, where he will play a bigger part in the rotation. And, you know, I wish the best for him moving forward.
Really, the only game that I can remember that stands out was the Virginia game in 22-23, where he comes in. I want to say he was 3 of 6 from three, 2 of 6 from 3, something like that. But he gave Florida State a fighting chance in that first half. Came in off the bench, hit a couple deep threes, kind of extended that pack line defense that Virginia's infamous for, and yeah, you know, gave Florida State a chance. They didn't end up winning because they just could not find offense down the stretch, but at least he gave them a chance.
Yeah, that, I mean, that entire 22-23 season was pretty much like you know, almost kind of forgettable in a way. But I mean, yeah. I mean, that's a good moment for him, though. That's a really good moment for him. But like I say, you know, I wish him the best of Furman, man. You know, like I said, I think he's a really good player. You know, I really want to see him excel moving forward. Next, we can talk about Cameron Fletcher. This news recently just broke. He's now entering the transfer portal. Played two seasons, a total of 17 games, averaged a little over 6 points, 5 rebounds. I think that we were really cheated out of the Cameron Fletcher experience at Florida State, because I really feel like he could have been a really great player if you know, injuries didn't get in the way, you know, especially early this past season. You know, I thought he was a really good energizer off the bench, you know, he being able to knock down shots, being having good moments defensively. But obviously in that North Carolina game was when he went down and when everything changed. So how do you feel about Cameron entering the portal?
We've talked about it a few times where I just thought it was best for both sides if Cameron Fletcher went a separate way from Florida State. You know, we don't know exactly when he's going to be back on the court. My expectation is December, January, just himself and whoever he ends up at knows he's 100% healthy. Wouldn't surprise me to see him out there earlier just because it's the kind of kid he is.
Right.
But I just think it makes sense for both sides to go their own separate ways. But man, what a tumultuous career for Cameron Fletcher, even going back to his first season at Kentucky. I mean,
yeah.
Coach Calipari sent him home, suspended him, saying, hey, he's got some things to work on, and we'll welcome him back when the time is right. Ends up transferring after the season, gets to Florida State. That first season was kind of rough. You could see the potential. You know, I talked to a lot of people that were super, super high on him. If they could develop him correctly, really needed to fix his off-ball defense. He got torched backdoor more than a few times. But then, you know, 22-23, I thought he was Florida State's best player in that first part of the season. Granted, that's not saying much because that team obviously wasn't very good. But he was bringing the energy. He was fighting on the glass. And, you know, he was willing to drive on defenses when it didn't really seem like driving lanes were open. And, you know, we just mentioned that Virginia game a couple minutes ago, Tom House. That's the first game he went down with that torn ACL. And then works back really fast, really hard. He's back on the floor 10 months later. I mean, he was available for Florida State's first game of the season in 23-24. Plays 7 games, hurts the same knee again. It was so heartbreaking. I felt so bad for him just knowing the path it took him to get to that spot, and just see him crumbled on the floor there in Chapel Hill was definitely disheartening. I wish the best for him. I hope he finds a good spot that he can thrive in and stay healthy, and most importantly.
I agree 100%. You know, just reflecting back on this past season for him, you know, you talk about how much he improved, and then of course the journey as far as getting back, you know, from his injury. You know, I feel like he had a lot of good moments, and I feel like there was certain moments where Florida State was really in like kind of like a bad funk, you know, and like, you know, during the course of the game, and then Cameron Fletcher would come in and just provide like a huge spark. And it didn't even have to be putting the ball in the basket. It could be, you know, getting a key steal. It could be making a good defensive play or making a good pass, or, you know, or getting an offensive rebound. You know, it was just the little things that he did, in my opinion, that really elevated the team and really brought a lot of energy. So, you know, that NC State game, you know, that to me, that's one that kind of still haunts me, because, you know, obviously we were up by like, I want to say 13, 14, 15 points, you know, like early in the second half of that game. And I thought Cameron Fletcher was really having a good performance, you know, leading up to that point. And many can say that, you know, that him going down was pretty much one of the turning points in the game. Obviously, RJ Davis and the rest of those guys, you know, they just went on a tear. I can't remember exactly what run that they went on, but I know they helped Florida State scoreless for like a good amount of time in that second half. And, you know, I think losing Cameron Fletcher was obviously a big key. You know, it was definitely a big loss, you know, throughout the course of the rest of the season. Yes, Florida State did manage to maintain and still have a pretty good year, but who knows where they could have been, you know, with the presence of Cameron Fletcher being healthy all season.
Yeah, so that run you just mentioned, UNC went on a 30-4 run from about the 13-minute mark of the second half to little under 5 minutes left, where they just completely shut Florida State down and they were getting out in transition. I'm trying to remember, but I want to say the injury came on towards the end of that run. I want to say it came with 5 or 6 minutes left. I really don't remember off the top of my head because that was a busy day.
Right.
But it really sucked to see him go down. And I still don't know exactly what happened. It looks like he just, I don't know if he put too much pressure on the takeoff when he went up for that layup and the knee just buckled. I really don't know what happened. And you know, Florida State's always secretive with their injuries. That still don't think they've come out and said anything officially about what the injury is. So we'll just have to see what comes out as he looks for a new home.
Yeah, so where do you possibly see him land? I know it's kind of up in the air right now, but where do you possibly see him landing? Do you think that he'll stay in the ACC? Do you think that he'll go to another conference? Like, what do you think?
It's tough. You know, does he want to continue playing at a high major level where he's potentially coming off the bench? Does he want to see major minutes and see the ball in his hands more? I really don't know exactly what he's looking for. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see him go back home and play for St. Louis. Obviously, they just hired Josh Schertz from Indiana State. I think that'd be a good fit. But I'd see him moving back home a little bit closer, whether that's, you know, playing for Coach Gates at Missouri. That would have surprised me. Whether it's playing at Illinois, which isn't too far away. None of those destinations would surprise me.
I saw somebody on X. It was crazy. I saw somebody on X saying that he would go to Arkansas and play for Coach Cali. And I was like, I don't think that would.
Yeah, I don't know.
Personally. Yeah. Especially, I mean, well, like, especially like, you know, with what you mentioned, you know, with how things kind of ended at Kentucky, you know, with him, with Coach Cal pretty much suspending him in that whole situation. But I mean, aside from everything, I think that whoever does grab Cam, you know, I think, like, I'll be real, like a healthy Cam or Fletcher can be a difference maker. I mean, I believe that wholeheartedly. And I mean, we even saw glimpses of that during his career at Florida State. So, you know, wherever he does land, hopefully it's the right situation for him. And hopefully it's a program that can help elevate his career forward.
Yeah, I wish we saw a fully healthy version of him this year, because I dreamt of having lineups with him and Jameer Watkins just terrorizing people on the wing together, and just how much fun that could have been if Fletcher could have been fully healthy for the rest of the season. And it sucks that we haven't seen him fully healthy in, you know, at this point.
At least 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, year and a half, which is, it's crazy. And even now, like, does he ever get fully healthy again? I really don't know. Is he just going to be 80% the player he used to be, 90%? We just don't know yet.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. I mean, he injured the same knee. Like, that's, yeah, like, that's the bad part right there. It's like, you know, it's not like, you know, it was one knee this year and the other knee the next year. Like, it's the same exact knee that he had to spend so much time recovering from. So that, I'm sure that recovery now, you know, that second injury is just brutal. And it's like, you know, I think about a lot of other players who have dealt with multiple major injuries, and, you know, they're pretty much just like pretty much a shell of themselves, you know. And, you know, I get it, you know, it's something that's not in their control, but at the end of the day, you know, they're just not the same player. They don't have the same quickness, they don't have the same burst of speed or whatever it is. So, you know, hopefully that's not the case with Cameron Fletcher. And I mean, he's still a very young player, so maybe he can come back a better version of himself. But, you know, that's something that we'll have to wait on, you know, once he does get healthy and be able to step back out on the floor. But moving on, man, we could talk about Baba Miller taking a couple visits. First one is another ACC team, Wake Forest. Obviously, you know, they had a pretty decent year. You know, obviously the top player on that team, Hunter Salas, you know, had a really spectacular year. They were one of the top contenders in the ACC. And then another one was FAU, who first year in the AAC, you know, I thought they did pretty good. One of the top contenders there as well. Didn't really do much in the tournament. I want to say they lost like first, second round, I believe, something like that. So. So, I mean, even then, you know, still a pretty good team, you know, in the AAC. So what are your thoughts on Baba, you know, taking these visits?
Yeah, he picked up that crystal ball for Kansas State after he visited there. What was it, 2 weeks ago now? Maybe three weeks ago? And I think kind of the expectation was he'd land there, and then we see him pop up at a couple more visits at Wake Forest and FAU. I'd be surprised to see him end up at FAU. I think he's a better caliber player than what FAU is going to look like post Dusty May. That's just my opinion. And on the flip side, Wake Forest has done as great of a job with transfers as anybody, especially those high ceiling guys like Hunter Salas, like Boopie Miller, who just transferred to SMU. Tyree Appleby, Alondis Williams, they've just done such a great job with these transfers that, you know, it would make a ton of sense. And I kind of hope it doesn't happen, because he'd find a way to terrorize Florida State. But it also would be kind of a circle of life moment, because his first game was at Wake Forest after that suspension in the 22-23 season. I was at that game. It was the first game he played in a Florida State uniform. So it would be a little bit of a circle of life moment. I still think Kansas State's the team to beat. We'll have to see if he ends up at any of these other schools for visits. But definitely interesting. Wake Forest has had an interesting transfer cycle so far this offseason. And not surprised to see him on their radar, but I think I'd be a little bit surprised to see him end up there.
As a personal Baba Miller fan, I just want to see him in a position to where he can really thrive and really expand his game. I really believe that he's super talented. And even as I was watching these past few years, you know, I saw the talent was there. I mean, I'm sure everybody saw it with the combination of the ball handling, the playmaking, obviously the outside shooting, the post play. So we clearly saw glimpses of it, but it was never on full display at Florida State. And even the first episode, like I mentioned before, you know, I questioned, like, hey, you know, is Baba, like, is Florida State the right fit for a player like Baba Miller, who has so much versatility? And so when he did decide to enter the portal, you know, it didn't surprise a lot of us. So, and it's like you mentioned to me, Wake Forest, you know, they have a really long history of, you know, being able to get good transfers and being able to help develop their games as a whole. So maybe that could be a good situation for him. Obviously, you know, he'll be another player from Florida State that decides to stay in the ACC. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is what it is. FAU, pretty good contender, if you ask me. Like I say, you know, they've been really good. They've been a really good team over the past few years. And I think that they're a program that's continuing to elevate at the next level. But I think if I had to choose between one or the other, I'll probably say Wake Forest, honestly, just because I feel like that might be the better situation for him. And I mean, like you mentioned to me, he played his first game of his Florida State career at Wake Forest. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy how things would come back to full circle. So we'll just have to see. I mean, I don't know if he has any other visits, you know, scheduled in the near future. But if it comes down between one or the other, you know, maybe Wake Forest might be the best move.
And we know Steve Forbes is going to let his players play. Like, he's not going to be someone that limits someone or tries to fit a square peg in a round hole. He's going to make it work no matter what. He does such a great job of adapting to the town he acquires. So I could see that being a good fit. I just don't want him terrorizing Florida State next season.
No, I feel
if all those tools come together.
I mean, that could be a good matchup. You know, him and Jerry Dang. You know, that duel could be really fun to watch. I mean, Jerry Dang is has proven to be a really good defensive player. And I mean, we're definitely going to dive into him a little later in this episode, but I would like that. I would love to see that. I mean, you know, obviously Baba would be projected to probably torch us, you know, especially him going to an ACC rival. But I would love to see, you know, how that would pan out.
Yeah, I would too. We'll just have to see where he ends up.
Right. But like I said, you know, I don't know if Baba has any other schools that he's scheduled to meet up with soon. I know there's FAU and I know there's Wake Forest, but at the end of the day, you know, as a personal fan of his, I just wish him the best moving forward. You know, that's just my big thing for him. Moving forward, you know, since we're already on the Jerry Dane conversation, let's talk about him. He officially signed to Florida State. I mean, we already talked about it, you know, in one of the past episodes. Big fans of his. I even went back and watched one of his games. I think he dropped a 37 in the game, and it was just spectacular to watch. It, you know, it's all around play. Scoring inside, scoring on the face up, you know, being able to space the floor, being a spot up shooter. Like, I love the fact that he can do a multitude of things on offense. You know, he doesn't really have to play on one side of the ball. He doesn't have to have the ball in his hands all the time. You know, he can be effective with or without the ball. And I think that's something that's really, really good about him. So now that Jerry Dang is officially a Seminole, how are you feeling?
Good. I mean, he was one of the first guys we mentioned really as soon as the transfer cycle started. And he was either Florida State's first or second contact. I want to say Marcus Foster, ironically enough, from Furman, was their first contact, and that was Jerry Dane. I'm glad Coach Hamilton, or I'm glad someone told Coach Hamilton, hey, your big, tall, lengthy guys are allowed to shoot a little bit, and he can shoot it. 39% from three at his size is really, really impressive. I'm super excited to see him in this offense if they can find a way to fill out the rest of this roster, because they've got a long ways to go. But that four tandem of him and Taylor Balbon is going to be a lot of fun to watch, especially if they can unlock his defensive versatility that is clearly there. He's got the athleticism, he's got the strength, he's got the size, just has to put it all together. And I think he's in the best spot to do that.
Man, that lineup with him and Taylor Balbon will be crazy, because I mean, we talked about it. You know, Taylor has taken big leaps throughout the course of his freshman year, and I think he's only going to get better heading into a sophomore campaign. And obviously, Jerry Dang, you know, he was a freshman as well, and he took a lot of big leaps too. So those are two young power forward centers, you know, who are continuing to maximize their game and will only get better moving forward. Like, that'll be crazy, you know, to be able to watch those lineups come. I mean, it provides a lot of floor spacing, a lot of length on the floor, you know, rim protection, you know, like, you know, versatility on defense. So I like that a lot, honestly.
And I could be wrong, but I believe both him and Bowen are Sudanese. So it's a little bit of similar background there. I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they are. And being from the Atlanta area, he's also, I think he either played on the same AAU team as Malik Ewan, who we'll talk about here in a second, or played him a lot, and they know each other. So at least there's a little bit of familiarity going around the roster as they've undergone crazy transitions.
Right. So let me ask you this. Like, do you possibly see Jerry Deng possibly being a number one option on certain nights? Because, I mean, I know that now with Jameer gone, you know, I think that's going to be, like, the biggest question up in the air. You know, who's going to be that leading scorer on the team?
Honestly, it's too soon to know. I mean, there's only six players on the roster right now with Bobo and Dane, Chandler Jackson, Christian Nitu, Daquan Davis, and A.J. Swinton, and Ewan. So only six guys signed on right now for next season. We got to see how they feel at the rest of this roster before we can really project like that. I don't know if it's really in his game to be a number one option, but this is also just from what we've seen so far. He's mainly been catch and shoot so far, has a little bit of ability to take it off the dribble, but I think at least early on, his role is going to be catch and shoot in the corner, really space the floor.
I can see that. You know, I'm just really curious to see that, because I think now with Jameer entering the draft, which we'll definitely dive into that later, I just feel like, you know, now just that top option as far as, you know, putting the team on the back, I mean, I think it's definitely up for grabs. And, you know, with him already showing that ability, I mean, you talk about spot-up shooting, you know, he's also had really great, spectacular offensive performances even at Hampton in his freshman year. So, you know, maybe that is not his game. You know, I get that. And I'm not saying that he'll be able to carry the team throughout the course of the season, but I do think that he can have some nights where he can carry the load offensively and possibly lead them to win. So who knows?
And at the same time, you also have to keep in mind the level of competition that he was playing at Hampton. I don't know that they played
that is
any
true.
High major schools. I'm trying to double check real quick. But it's not like Hampton's big school. I mean, they weren't exactly good last year. They were 9-24.
Yeah, they weren't.
But I'm trying to say they played James Madison, who was fine. But yeah, outside of that, they didn't really play any big school. So it's going to be a little bit of an adjustment period, at least early on for him.
I mean, that is true. I mean, especially now with him coming into the ACC, I mean, it's definitely a way tougher conference. And, you know, you have a multitude of great power forwards and centers that don't have to match up against. So that's going to be a challenge for him. I definitely understand, you know, your perspective. But, you know, slowly but surely, you know, as he becomes adjusted to, you know, to playing that style in the ACC, I think he'll find a way to, you know, just continue to maximize his game and just continue to, you know, to expand his offensive game as a whole. So I'm really excited. Really excited.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And I hope we see a little bit of iron sharpens iron situation where Bowen's able to get some shooting suggestions from Dane. Dane's able to get some defensive suggestions from Bowen and kind of just mold together, because I feel like if you put the best of Bowen with the best of Dane, you have just an amazing player, like an all ACC caliber player.
No, 100%. I definitely agree. But I'm excited for this upcoming season for Jerry Deng as a Seminole. Another signee that we can talk about is Mr. Malik Ewan. A lot of people may know him. He played 1 year at Ole Miss, ended up transferring to South Plains for the 23-24 season. Was ranked, shout out to JUCO recruiting, you know, they ranked him the top center in the NJCAA. And then, of course, was all NJCAA first team honors. I tried to find some film on him. I couldn't really find much on him. Yeah, I couldn't really find anything really on him. But have you been able to really watch his game a little bit and, you know, see, you know, what his play style is?
I saw a couple clips here and there. I forget what game it was, but I was able to watch one game. He's a very willing passer, and at times I would say he's too willing for someone of his size, you know, 6'10", 220, 230. Great touch around the basket. I wish he would use that more often. And that's crazy saying that, because he averaged, you know, basically 15-9. But yeah, there's times where he's just a little too willing to pass out to the corner, and the turnovers reflect that. I mean, he was averaging close to 3 turnovers per game, pretty much a 1-to-1 assist turnover ratio. If he can keep those turnovers down and keep that finishing around the basket ability, he could be a high-level player. You know, a lot of people really high on him coming out of high school. And I'm kind of hoping that the situation of starting at Ole Miss, he actually ended up at USF for like 2 or 3 months, then transferred out, went to South Plains College. So I'm hoping that experience maybe humbled him, maybe not humbled him, but just made him hungrier to thrive at this high major level. And if he could put the tools together, there's a lot of people really high on him coming out of high school. And you know, Florida State needs a center, and at least he can score. around the basket, which is something Florida State definitely needs.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Is he more of like a paint player where, you know, he gets most of his touches inside? Can he space the floor a little bit?
I don't even know if he attempted a three last year, to be honest with you. I'd have to go back and look at his stats, but definitely more of your traditional back to the basket kind of big, likes to operate not quite on the low post, low block, but, you know, kind of settles in that 10 to 12 feet area. Really head on a swivel looking for passes. If not, he could blow his way to the rim. Very high ceiling that if Florida State can develop the right way, he could be a good player. It was one of those when I saw the name being serviced, I'm like, man, really a JUCO guy? And I started watching, I'm like, oh, he could be good. And he averaged close to 3 blocks per game as well. I want to say it was 2.8, had 2 games with 8 blocks. So he's got a very high ceiling if they can tap into it.
No, I get it. So how do you think he'll be able to thrive defensively under a team with Leonard Hamilton, especially being at 6'10"? Because, I mean, we all know Coach Ham, you know, he loves the 7-footers, but he's a little bit under. So how do you think that he'll be defensively for Florida State?
I don't think he can switch 1 through 5 just from what people are talking about at Ole Miss and seeing some of that chatter. And I don't know that he has quite the athleticism to keep up on the perimeter if they ask him to do that. We'll just have to see if Florida State, you know, switches their defensive schemes at all, whether they go back to the defense they played in the late 2010s instead of switching 1 through 5 that we've seen so far in the 2020s. Also depends on how they fill out the rest of the roster, because they need at the very least one more center, if not two. So I think that's going to matter as much as anything. We'll just have to see. But if they switch him 1 through 5, I think you're setting him up to fail.
We'll just have to wait and see. I mean, this was a team too that pretty much really thrived that 1 through 5 switching, you know, on defense. And I mean, obviously, you know, there's a lot of versatility. We talk about Baba Miller, Cam Corin, Jalen Ganey, you know, the rest of the guys, you know, who were able to do that. But now, if you do acquire a guy like that, like Malik Ewing is projected to be, you know, now you do have to make some small adjustments defensively. But I mean, you know, I mean, if you say that he's a really good player, especially, you know, offensively, then I think that he could find a way to really be effective, you know, with this Florida State team. So I'm just excited to see, you know, what he could do with this team this upcoming season.
Yeah, this may be a crazy comparison, but he's one of those, if you squint, you kind of see a little bit of Jahlil Okafor at Duke. I feel like he could have at least kind of a similar play style to him.
That's really interesting. I would definitely have to look into it, but I honestly hope that somehow, some way, I can find some type of highlights, some type of film of him, just so I can at least give like my full analysis of him.
It was one of those I had to look, like I just had to look up South Plains games, like not just look for Malik Ewing and highlights, because I couldn't find any, but I was able to find a couple games that they played here and there.
Well, actually, I want to say I saw some, like some high school film, but I'm like, I don't want to go all the way back to high school, you know what I'm saying? I mean, obviously players change, you know, obviously players get better, you know, from then, you know, obviously, and then obviously with him playing 2 years in college, you know, so I could have went back and watched his high school highlights, but I was like, yeah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I ended up watching most of their game against Salt Lake City, which was 4 or 5 months ago. It was one of the better or more highly ranked JUCO games of the year. And South Plains, I want to say they were the best team in JUCO this year. So it was a high level basketball game for the most part.
Shoot, man. Somehow, some way I'll be able to find it, man. But, you know, like I said, congrats to Malik for now being a new signee for Florida State. You know, I can't wait to see, you know, what he's able to do this upcoming season. And last topic before we get out of here, we got to talk about the guy, because, I mean, we both kind of saw this coming, but we didn't really know for sure. But now it's official. Jameer Watkins has declared for the 2024 NBA draft. This past season, averaged a little over 15.5 points, 6 rebounds, nearly 3 assists, and 2 steals on 45, 34, 79 shooting splits. You know, obviously stepping in, you know, really maximizing his game, coming from VCU and out of Florida State, and really being the top option for the team. Winning the Sunshine Slam Tournament MVP after that big win over Colorado early in the season. And I'll be real, I mean, I think that he really elevated his game to be one of the best players in the ACC. I mean, obviously, he's an elite all-around defender. I think that throughout the season, he really improved on his perimeter shooting, you know, which, I mean, he was never really a bad shooter, but, you know, he was really one of the more consistent shooters of Florida State throughout the season. And I was looking at a few draft boards. A lot of people have him like late first round, early second round. So I don't know. I mean, that might fluctuate, you know, between now and June, considering, you know, that this draft is not really the strongest as it has been in recent years. So how are you feeling about Jameer entering the NBA draft?
It's expected, but it sucks to see him go because, man, was he so much fun to watch for Florida State this season. We didn't quite know what to expect. I thought he'd be a great fit for Florida State. I did not see the season he had coming. I mean, he was simply spectacular for really all of ACC play. I mean, I want to say the last 19 games of the season, he was in double-figure scoring. Night in and night out, the most consistent guy on the floor, was working the hardest on both ends of the floor, really. He was so much fun to watch. Just completely bullied people. You could tell that the size he put on over the offseason did him wonders. And just, like I said, he was able to bully just about anybody on the floor. And as that jump shot developed throughout the season, it just became a little bit harder to guard. He shot really well at the free throw line on really high volume, you know, damn near 80% on a lot of attempts. I mean, he had multiple games with 10-plus attempts from the free throw line. So I think he's one of those guys that teams are really going to fall in love with throughout the process, especially when it's just one of those drafts, like you said, not a very well thought of draft. And a guy like Jameer Watkins, who very clearly has the athleticism, has the length, and he at least has the good foundation for a good jump shot. There's going to be a team. I mean, we'll see as we get closer to draft time, but I'm pretty sure there'll be a team mid late first round that goes, hey, we need a guy on the wing that can play some defense. Let's take Jameer Watkins.
Yeah, and I mean, especially, I mean, it can honestly be a team that may not be like a real playoff contender, but, you know, it's like a young team that's on the rise, you know, that could possibly use another wing guy who can be effective on both ends of the floor, you know, and Jameer could possibly thrive there, so who knows. But I'm definitely with you, you know. One season, to me, wasn't really enough for me.
Yeah.
You know, watching Jameer Watkins at Florida State. I mean, it's like you mentioned, I mean, he was just so electric on both ends of the floor. And if you ask me, he was definitely one of the best defensive players in the conference, if you ask me, man. Like,
he's one of the best players overall. I mean, sorry to cut you off, but how is he not an all ACC team? We already talked about that. That's what I was thinking about. Incredible.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I was thinking about. I mean, you know, I'm just thinking about him applying tremendous ball pressure on defense. You know, even there was moments where, you know, where he was a really good rim protector too, you know, when he would step inside, you know, and be able to protect the paint. So, you know, and then of course, offensively, you know, I mentioned his ability to just, you know, continue to improve on the outside, you know, his ability to drive the lane and be able to finish inside, you know, absorb contact. So he was just a tremendous all-around player. And I know that Florida State had their ups and downs throughout the season. So I know that many people may have not had like eyes on him, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I mean, when you look at just Jameer's elevation, like at least from his first season at Florida State compared to the past years, you know, playing at VCU, you know, you could tell like his improvements was just tremendous all around. You know, I'm not gonna lie, like I really like, I know that people are saying that he'll be like a late first round. I could possibly see him going mid, to be honest. I mean, it really just depends on, you know, like what the draft looks like and, you know, like what situation works for him.
For sure. This may be a lot of projection, but I would love to see him with the New York Knicks. And I'm not even a Knicks fan. I just think his play style would fit so well there as a guy that can clearly handle heavy minute loads, is very willing to get after it on the defensive floor, very tough nose, physical. I think he'd just be a tremendous culture fit for them there. Like you mentioned, we'll just have to see how this pre-draft process goes for him. If he attends the NBA combine, how well he does there. I think he's going to surprise some people with his athletic testing. And I have a feeling that wingspan, when they measure that, and there a few teams are going to go, oh, wow. Because he's got a crazy wingspan on him.
No, I agree 100%. I mean, New York's not a bad situation. I mean, I want to say, isn't he from like the Jersey area? I want to say.
I believe like he's from Trenton, New Jersey. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Let me double check. But
I thought. But I mean, New York wouldn't be a bad situation either. I mean, that's a young contender. And I mean, I think that he could really be good in that second unit. I mean, especially if you put him in certain lineups next to guys like Jalen Brunson, guys like Josh Hart, Julius Randle when healthy, you know, being able to put the ball on the floor, being able to create, take a lot of pressure off the other offensive weapons on the floor. So, you know, like New York wouldn't be bad either. Another team I want to see, maybe Oklahoma City. I don't know, honestly. I mean, obviously, I mean, I don't know if I would have to go check and see, like, you know, how many first round picks they have upcoming, but
all of them.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, especially after that Paul George trade in 2019. But I would like that destination. Brooklyn's kind of like I don't know what they are.
Brooklyn's got so many wings right now, just between McHale, Cam Johnson, Dorian Finney-Smith. They're pretty filled out on wings, and he is from Trenton, so I was correct on that. Oklahoma City is kind of in that same situation with me, where you got Jalen Williams, you got Lou Dort, they traded for Gordon Hayward. Like, they're another team that doesn't really need any more wings. They need bigs more than anything. We'll just have to see. You know, it really all depends on how it performs at the combine and in these pre-draft workouts.
Exactly. So let me ask you this. So where do you personally think that he'll be drafted? Are you seeing mid first round, late first round, second round? Where do you see him?
I've seen him really all over the place. I've seen him late first. I've seen him late second. So we'll see. I'd find it hard to believe he makes his way out of the first round, just with how low quality of a draft it is and how high of a floor he really has.
Right. I mean, like I say, if you ask me, I mean, I haven't really had a chance to do my due diligence on this draft. You know, I don't really know. I still don't even know who's even going to go number one, or who's even projected to go number one. And it's crazy, because I mean, most times I do actually like do my research and everything, but I haven't really had time this year. So I'm about to look into it. You know, I'm about to look at a lot of the talent, you know, within the draft, you know, and see just, you know, and just see, you know, and just see how everything weighs out. Who knows?
Yeah, it's definitely a lower quality draft, and you know, it's not your fault you don't know who's going number one. I don't think anybody does.
Yeah,
it's just one of those drafts where there's so many guys that could be number one, but they don't have the number one hype that you've seen in years past, whether it be, you know, obviously definitely not Wembanyama from last year, but even going back to the Anthony Edwards draft, no one has that kind of ceiling or hype, or Kate Cunningham. It's definitely a much less thought of class.
Yeah, because I'm saying, like, I remember this is probably like November or something like that. I saw Ron Holland from the G League Ignite. He was number one for a while, but I don't know if that's changed, honestly. I mean, I'm sure it probably has.
Yeah, I don't even think he's top 10 anymore, honestly.
That's crazy. Is that bad of a drop-off?
It is, yeah. Because the one guy who's kind of stayed consistent is Matt Tuipulotu.
I like him a lot, yeah.
Who Florida State had a chance with him in his recruitment. I kind of stand by, if he chose to go to college, he probably would have come to Florida State. But he didn't have the best year either. But
I think,
you know,
anybody who went to the Ignite didn't really have the best year.
Yeah, it wasn't a great situation this year, it seemed like. But then outside of that, it's like, I believe his name is Alexander Sarr in France.
Yeah.
Who's averaging like 9 points and 7 rebounds, but has a really high ceiling. I think he's kind of the favorite right now, but just kind of tells you the drop off from last year where Wemby was averaging like 20 and 13.
I mean, to basically close out my statement, I think Jameer, maybe just me being biased, maybe I just think Jameer is definitely one of the highly talented players in this kind of, you know, weird NBA draft, if you ask me. Like, I mean, I know, like I said, I mean, I've seen the draft boards, I've seen people put him late first, early second, but if you ask me, I think somehow, some way he could find a way to get at least like 13, 14, 15 or something, like somewhere like that. But I mean, who knows?
Wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, like I said, he's got all the tools that people look for. There can never be enough 3-and-D wings in the NBA, and he has the potential to be more than that. And especially if that 3-point shot fills out, I think he could be a really, really talented player. There's no reason to me he can't have an OG Anunoby type career.
Right. Definitely 100%, man. But that's going to wrap up this episode, man. Actually, before we close out, sorry I sound so terrible. I'm getting over some sickness, you know, over the weekend. And I thought I'd be good, you know, coming like this morning. But, you know, I'm still kind of recovering from it. I'm doing a lot better, but, you know, still a process. But Austin, once again, appreciate you for coming on, man. Let the people know where to find you on social media. And then, of course, where to find all of your work and your updates.
Absolutely. Find me on Twitter at EasyVZNG. Then you can find all my Florida State stuff at si.com/FSU/Austin-VZ. The basketball tab is not working right now, as we're going through an operating system that should be fixed in the next week or two here, hopefully. But we're turning out content, especially, I know this is a little bit of a tangent, but the NFL draft was this past weekend, which is my second favorite time of the year. It's like that and March Madness, I just absolutely love. So a lot of NFL draft content came from me these last couple of weeks.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. I know you've been covering the Mavs of the recent, you know, right now they're tied at 2-2 with the Clippers right now. Who do you have coming out of that series?
Luka has to, he's got to get healthy. You can tell his knee's been banged up the last few games. I think Dallas can come out, but they pretty much have to win game five, and they have to find a way to beat the Clippers without Kawhi, because right now the Clippers are 2-0 when they don't have Kawhi, and they're 0-2 when they do have Kawhi. So Luka's got to play healthy. Kyrie's been outstanding all series. He's been so much fun to watch. And Luka just hasn't been a level that we've seen him in the playoffs in the past. And a lot of that's due to this lingering knee issue that he has. He's due for a big game here at some point. Like, he just is. At some point, he's going to have 47, 15, and 12. Whether that's game five, whether that's game seven, we don't really know yet, but he's got to have it at some point if Dallas ends up coming out of the series.
I do have Dallas coming out of the series, and I mean, I agree. I mean, I don't think Luka's been at his best. I want to say game three, he shot like 7-25 or something like that, which is just crazy.
He's had a rough series shooting the ball. Yeah.
And I mean, give credit to them. I mean, the Dallas still ended up finding a way to win that game, but I mean, it's like you say, you know, they're 0-2 with Kawhi on the floor, then they're 2-0 with Kawhi. So kind of like a weird situation, but game five is definitely important. I know that it's on the road, but I mean, clearly they've shown us that they can win on the road. They won game two on the road, so it'd be really interesting. I think game five could possibly be the deciding factor of the series. Who knows?
We have to give a lot of credit to former Seminole Terrence Mann, who's just done an outstanding defensive job on Luka. And you know, it's so hard for me to watch it as Terrence. I love Terrence. He's awesome. But also, I've been a Dallas Mavericks fan for a long time. And to see him kind of have some, I won't say cheap shots, but he definitely is good at getting under people's skin. And I could see how a lot of Dallas fans don't like him. I could certainly understand it.
Right.
So it kind of puts me in a tough position time to time. But he's done a phenomenal job on Luka. Really as good of a job as we've seen anybody play on Luka in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's crazy too. But I mean, it's like you said, I mean, I think Luka's definitely in for a big game soon. I mean, we obviously know the history that he has against the Clippers, you know. Mm-hmm. But them playing in the playoffs in recent years in the past, and I think he wants that series win. I really believe that he does want that series win. So we'll just have to wait and see. But as for myself, follow me on X at Nick Andre ATR. Please make sure to check out my articles on Chop Chat covering Florida State basketball. Once again, appreciate everybody for tuning in, and I hope that you guys have a great rest of your day.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.